The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Visa.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin here as well. We haven't heard enough from Kelly this morning. How you doing, Kelly? You okay, man?
Have you heard about this hot new app out there called Shazam?
Yes, I have.
So sometimes our conversations during the break are great, and sometimes we just talk about Shazam for 2 minutes and how great it is.
It is. It's one of those things that in our lifetime you're like, oh, we have arrived in the future.
Yeah. It was like the first app ever, I feel like.
You imagine, like, imagine when you were 8 years old and somebody rolled up on you and was like, hey, you know what? When you're, you know, I don't know, 20, 25 years from now, however old you are, Kelly, when, there's going to be something in your hand. It's going to be a phone, and it's also, among other things, going to be able to just press a button. It'll tell you what song is playing anywhere.
I'd push you to the ground. I said, get out of here, Doc Brown. Go back to the future.
It's an amazing thing.
It is. Really is.
Did you figure out what song that was? So you Shazam?
No, I didn't. I had my phone on me.
Here's the thing about Shazam. You got to have your phone on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the problem.
Kelly Bidlin, everybody. He's okay, it appears. Still to come this hour, Dan Wested in studio to talk Wimbledon with us. Other things that he's doing, but Wimbledon primarily, what he if he has any plays today, if he has any thoughts on tomorrow's card as well. Again, as Wimbledon, it's weird because you had some folks again who were playing, you know, scheduled third round matches while the first round was finishing out. It's a whole thing. But it'll be up to date after today because there's nothing but sunshine in London as the matches go on. Not much on a betting card for me today except for those two. Only one was already a winner this morning, Buskova, the only one still to come on the lady side. And hopefully Andy Murray can get it done up 2-1 against Tsitsipas. That one has to resume. That one tied over from yesterday, but we'll find out what Dan has a little later on. And Tim Lawson, the host of The Better Life. Are you familiar with The Better Life podcast, Kelly?
Yes, I am.
One of the great podcasts because Tim found himself in a niche, which was, it wasn't like, what does he call it? Rec plus betters? Is that what he calls it?
Believe so. Yeah.
And I think it was such a great little thing that he's been doing. He's over 200 episodes in. Tim Lawson joins us to talk U.S. in the Women's World Cup as well. Not just the U.S., but the Women's World Cup entirely, which is in less than 2 weeks. But first, Lou Finocchiaro. Always a pleasure when sweet Lou joins us to talk UFC. It's been too long, Lou. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. I sure appreciate you having me on. Big, huge weekend for the UFC in Las Vegas, and we're ready to rock and roll.
By the way, Lou is a VSiN First Strike contributor. How would you rate this card, UFC 290? Pretty darn good. How would you rate it?
I'd rate the main card, the five or six events. I'll even go down to the main event of the prelims with Lawler and Price. From that fight forward, you have really excellent world-class athletes. Below that, you have a lot of what I consider to be due diligence fights, fights where there's mismatches, setup fights, and maybe a better opportunity to log information than try and actually wager on those fights.
Okay, well, let's start with what you just mentioned there, which you just slipped in, which is sort of the main of the prelims, which is Robbie Lawler in his last fight, as I understand it, going up against Nico Price. Lawler is a pretty sizable dog at plus 185. Do you have a wager on this one?
I think the way I'm going to approach this, Gil, is to understand that both of these fighters are there for a reason, and the reason they're there is because they both feature negative strike differential, meaning they throw a huge amount of volume, but they get hit, each of them, with more than they throw out there. So this thing is set for fireworks. And if we look at the pricing on the fight, under 2.5, minus 180. Fight goes the distance, no, minus 280. So somebody's going to get finished here. Price, longer, taller, younger, but he's not that powerful, and he was finished in his last fight. In fact, he's been finished in two of his last three. Now, Lawler's record isn't much better, but he's been fighting. He went to decision with Colby Covington, went to decision with Neil Magny, and then had a blooper in his last fight against Barbarina. I guess this is a long-winded way of saying someone's knocking someone else out. We know every time Lawler shows up in the octagon, he brings his best. This is his retirement fight. I'm counting on his best. Lawler straight up, plus 190, reasonable. Lawler inside the distance or via KO, 4-1, I'd have to put a little bit on that as well.
Okay. By the way, I say I'm told because you never know with these guys if it's their last fight in reality or not. Before we get to the main card, was there anything else, Lou? You kind of hinted that you didn't love anything in the early prelims or the prelim, but maybe I misread that. Is there anything you want to bet on besides Lawler?
Right now, Gil, no. The undercards got me scared. I love to find plus prices. There's a couple guys down there, but I'm afraid I'd lose my UFC badge of authenticity if I gave them out. I'm just not ready to just yet.
Okay, let's go to the main card. Bo Nickel was supposed to fight Treshawn Gore. It's going to be Val Woodburn now, and Nickel is a minus. Am I reading this right? Minus 2,400 favorite. People love betting dogs, Lou. Is there a dog that can bite here?
In a fight, the dog can always bite with a Sunday shot that the other opponent doesn't see. That's the only real shot for this other young man who steps in on 4 days' notice. He's not really, he's a striker. Very little wrestling takedown defense or wrestling aptitude to begin with. And he's fighting a guy that's been a world-class wrestling talent since he was in diapers. This is a complete setup fight. We can tell that Bo Nickel being on the main card ahead of Robbie Lawler, the organization has Nickel star tagged, and this is a setup fight and one that we really shouldn't try and derive any advantage from because I don't see any there.
Is there an underdog you're playing on the main card?
There is no underdog I'm playing on the main card. No, that's why I really wanted to give the Lawler position. Now, there are plus positions on the main card that I'm going to advocate. And when we get to the main event, I'll lay one out for you there.
Well, let's do that. Let's go to Alexander Volkanovsky is a favorite in the main event, featherweight fight, maybe the greatest featherweight fighter there ever has been in Volkanovski against Yair Rodriguez. Volkanovski, though, a minus 375 favorite to win this, the 34-year-old, a prohibitive favorite. You do have a play here, though.
Absolutely have a play here. Love the fight. If you look at Rodriguez, he's younger, taller, longer, extremely explosive and fast, a natural 145er that's just grown into 145 over his last couple of fights. That said, his last couple of fights have been efficient and against opponents nowhere near in the same kind of world-class category as Volkanovski. Volkanovski, meanwhile, a guy that fights at 145, played rugby at 205, and just got done in his last fight competing at middleweight at 155 against Islam Makhachev, arguably the pound-for-pound king in the whole of the UFC. And in that fight, Makhachev, who weighed 155, competed at 180. So you're going to have Volkanovski, who's surely used to dealing with larger guys. He's not going to be intimidated by Yair Rodriguez's size in any way, shape, or form. However, the ferocity and the quickness and the speed of Rodriguez will make this a challenging fight for a couple of rounds until Volkanovski backs him up, wears him out, takes his cardio, then takes his heart. Volkanovski inside the distance, currently plus 130. I really like that position as my best bet on the card.
Best bet on the card. Okay. Three in pocket so far. We'll review them momentarily. You do have a fourth.
The fourth would be a little parlay because, again, I don't like to lay more than I'm going to return. So in this case, I see two razor blade guys in great position. Jalen Turner was supposed to fight Dan Hooker in his last fight. Instead, Hooker got hurt, and they gave him a world-class sawed-off shotgun Polish wrestler. And though Turner lost via close split decision, he arguably won that fight, and he showed really well. He's on the bounce against a guy in Dan Hooker that's used to being longer and taller. He's not going to be longer and taller in this fight. I also think at this age, Hooker's well into his 30s, lost a step. I look for Turner to have his way with Hooker, and I would match that with Brandon Moreno in the co-main event against Pantoja. Moreno lost to Pantoja when he was 20 and he was 22. Pantoja was at the time a full-grown man at 27. Now Pantoja's 33 and Moreno's a full-grown man at 27, and he's taller, he's longer, he's faster, he's more athletic and has wrestling chops. I like Moreno teamed with Jalen Turner at a dead even plus money. for a nice little parlay on the main card.
I like when Lou says things like, take your cardio, take your heart. Kelly, I'm going to take your cardio and take your heart later after the show. Here are the four bets from Lou, by the way, if we can flash those up on the screen. The best bet for him resides in the main event itself, the main event between Volkanovski and Rodriguez. He's got inside the distance there, plus 130. Then he does have the parlay he just mentioned, Brandon Moreno and Jalen Turner. Yes. Correct.
Justin Turner, not the third baseman for the Red Sox. Sorry, I was thinking of great beards this morning.
I had y'all's back. Robbie Lawler, plus 190, he mentioned, and Robbie Lawler inside the distance at 4-1 as well. So you are taking a flyer on Lawler there at plus 190, Lou. Before we go, 30, 45 seconds left here. I haven't had a chance to ask you this in a while. Regardless of weight class in UFC, what's the matchup you would most like to see at this point?
I'd like to see John Jones against Francis Ngannou. I don't think, and unfortunately we may not get that. So for an attainable fight, how about we go to Pereira at now light heavyweight? He just went from middleweight after getting knocked out by Adesanya to light heavyweight. If he can win a few fights there, Adesanya will chase him to 205. I'd love to watch that again.
Sweet Lou. Lou Finocchiaro. You can follow him at Twitter at GamBlue. Again, VSiN First Strike contributor. Dave Ross, of course, chief on that as well. Thank you, Lou. Great seeing you, man.
Thanks, guys. Good luck to everybody.
Lou Finocchiaro, who, by the way, also, Kelly, is the nicest human being on Earth, should be pointed out.
I can confirm that.
Yeah. Mike Pritchard and Lou Finocchiaro, both nicest humans on Earth, I would say. Let's come back with some World Cup on the ladies' side. Tim Lawson from The Better Life joins us next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Split bets.
Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out, all of today's betting splits for every game at vsin.com. You all right, Kelly? Seemed a little slow on the draw there with the split bets.
Yeah.
All right.
I had to talk to Dakota about something. I forgot. It was that time.
Oh, you're doing your job back there.
Yeah.
It's that time?
It's also why I couldn't scream. Yeah, that time for splitting bets.
Oh.
That's why I also didn't scream, because I didn't want to blow out the eardrums of about six people downstairs.
Understood. Just checking. People were worried. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that he has been on my podcast before. I am not quite sure if he's been on a numbers game before. If so, it's been a while. He is the host of one of the great podcasts in the betting space that has ever been out there. It's called The Better Life. He is my friend, Tim Lawson. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing very well, Gil. I was on a numbers game, I think, in studio in 2019 after the Global Gaming Expo.
Yes.
But I believe that is my only a numbers game. I've had hundreds of tweets read on a numbers game, but I've only had the one in studio appearance.
Is that a Pete Rose jersey I'm looking at behind you? Is that what that's?
That is a Pete Rose jersey. I figured a gambler's basement is it brings a gambler's basement together to have a P. Rose jersey on the wall there.
Before we get into the Women's World Cup, which I know you, for those who don't know, but those who are serious bettors in the gambling space know that Tim bets women's soccer quite successfully. Before we get to that, The Better Life, for those who are unfamiliar with your podcast, The Better Life, give us the sort of elevator pitch on what it is exactly.
Yeah, the Better Life is, as you mentioned, it speaks to recreational and rec plus bettors together. And what I love about the Better Life is, you know, we talk to sports bettors, we talk to casino players, we talk to poker players, the spectrum of gambling and what it means to be a bettor. And a lot of the episodes are me talking to a gambler and learning who they are as a person. It's really what inspired the Better Life. It's taken its turns here and there in being like event coverage and talking about big news and stuff like that here and there, but largely talking to bettors about who they are as a gambler, their first exposure to gambling, their journey to where they are now, with the aha moment of how they got good at what they do, or what, or, you know, their a passion for this game or that game. And it's built a nice little community, and 200 episodes plus later, I'm happy to still be doing it.
I couldn't be prouder of you. You absolutely found just a spectacular niche in the space, and couldn't be happier for you over the years. Let's talk some Women's World Cup. You're wearing the old USA jersey. It didn't get lost on me. So give me the reason, because a lot of people are just like, you know, a lot of people, forgive me, I know you're a big fan, but a lot of people are just going to show up for this, both from a fan and a betting perspective, and they want to bet the USA, let's be honest. They're just like, hey, I want to have money behind the team I want to see win. What's the reason for and against doing that?
So the big reason for, so the U.S. opened, I think, plus 350, and it kind of slowly got down to 3-1. You get 3-1 for a lot of the beginning of this year. It's since gotten down to plus 250, plus 225 in a lot of places. And it's because of what you're describing, Gil. People are just like, oh, that's right, the Women's World Cup's coming on. Let me get my bet in on America. I can tell you that if you want to bet America, go bet America, because there aren't a lot of reasons not to. I have a few reasons why I have bets other places, but you know, people are going to talk about the key injuries that are, you know, Mallory Swanson, Becky Sauerbrunn, Kristen Press, we've known for a while, is going to be in it, but this team is chock full of talent, and no place better than on that front line of Sophia Smith, Trinity Rodman, Alex Morgan. That's a potent front line. There is world-class talent up and down this roster. The starting 11 is always going to be the best team on the pitch for every game that they're a part of. And the only thing I want to caution people, this isn't like professionals playing amateurs, right? I think this is something we kind of get caught up with the women's team, is this belief that they are just this juggernaut that's just going to bowl through people. There are other professionals in this tournament with, you know, Germany, Spain, England, Australia, and they play in Europe, right, where the expectations are higher, right? And so the competition's going to be stiff. You know, I'm a little nervous that Paul Carr and Chris Velika both stated that they like the team that I also like, because we all know how that goes.
Yes.
But you know, outside of, you know, Germany and a couple long shots that I have a bet on, I mean, it's hard to believe that the United States aren't going to make it to the final. They'll have to go through Spain to get there, but Spain has had some drama inside of their organization with players threatening to not show up if things didn't change internally. Now, it seems like those are being resolved, and Spain does have probably the best midfielder in this tournament. It's not going to be easy, but, I mean, the United States have a pretty clear path to the final, and you know, there's no reason to not have a bet on the U.S. because the number's not going to get any better, barring some wild upset or injury that we weren't expecting.
By the way, Women's World Cup starts on July 20th. If you're wondering, hey, why are they talking about this? Because I'm going on vacation next week, and by the time I get back, it will have already started. So we want to get this in. So then, besides Germany, what were some of the long shots you bet already?
So I like Norway. They're 50-1, and a big part of the reason why they're such long odds is because they're going to have to go through the United States to get there, right? And that's that. If you're on the U.S.'s side of the bracket, your odds are just naturally a little bit longer because of that. But Norway has two or three quality player, world-class players. They're not going to be as deep as Spain or the United States, but this is a team that has strikers. They're going to be able to score goals. The big question is, are they going to be able to keep goals out of the back of their own net? But at 50-1, you can even get them at 65-1. I think at Caesars, I think they're worth a play. And then a team that seems like no one's talking about is Canada. And most places have them around like 25-30-1, but MGM there in Nevada has them at 40-1. And I got a piece of that. This is a team that has a bunch of talent on it. Christine Sinclair, you know, even in her age, hasn't missed a step. Shalina Zdorsky is going to lead that back line. At 40-1, they're going to have to get through the likes of France and Germany, but that's probably a little bit more likely than maybe someone on the other side of the bracket having to go through Australia, Spain, U.S. So I like Canada 40-1. If you're in Vegas, or if you're in an area that copies MGM's Nevada lines, I think 40-1 is worth a bet in Canada.
Okay. Tim said nobody's talking about Canada. I was in my head. I'm like, were you talking about Canada at any point, Kelly? Were you talking about the Netherlands or Sweden, for that matter, at any point of this? All right, Tim, give me a betting tenet from the group stage. Like, what is something bettors ought to keep in mind?
So, there's no group of death, right? That's one thing. There's a group of uncertainty with a few teams that all could sort of jockey for the first and second spot. But there's no group of death. You have big favorites in every group for a reason. And, you know, FIFA's not dumb. They know that in order for the women's game to continue to grow, that they need to make sure that all the big name teams make it into the knockout round, right? So it's set up that way that there's no accident that one of their big teams gets in there. So the group stage, from an outright and even from a qualifying standpoint, there's really not a whole lot of value. I like Canada at 2-1 in Group B. I think they're going to be able to compete there. And then Brazil plus 150, they're in the same group as France. France, another team that has had some drama internally with their organization, with their federation. Brazil, ton of chalk, a lot of pedigree, chalk full of talent, a lot of pedigree. I think Brazil is better chance to win that group than the number implies. But you're not going to find a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of opportunity on the futures market coming out of the group stage, just because it's so top heavy. It's very top heavy.
Okay. Before you go, we have about 90 seconds. When we do the Men's World Cup, we always talk about things like Golden Boot, Golden Ball, top goal scorer. Do we have the equivalent in this, and are they out yet?
They're not out yet. Not that I've been able to see. I checked all of my outs this morning, couldn't find any, but the players that I am. I don't have a big position on the United States. Where I'm going to have my big positions on the United States are with their players. Sophia Smith, Trinity Rodman, Crystal Dunn, all players that you should be looking at and considering for top goal scorer and Golden Ball. And then also Sam Kerr, probably the deadliest striker in the tournament for Australia. It's her home squad. Home field. She's going to do fantastic. Those are the four names I'm looking for in the players' futures markets.
Okay. And Golden Ball is what specifically, again, for those who don't know?
Golden Ball is essentially MVP. It's essentially MVP. It's more player voted. Top goal scorer and Golden Boot is just based on metrics of top goals of who scores the most goals.
Okay. So your biggest position will be on, just to reiterate,
Germany at 8-1 that I found that we got at South Point.
Germany at 8-1, which we have in pocket. Okay. Yeah. Tim, always a pleasure. Again, the name of the podcast is The Better Life. When do you expect a new episode to come out? Anytime soon?
Monday with a buddy of mine who just got back from the WSOP. So talked about his experience there.
Ooh, that should be interesting with the World Series of Poker. Sir. It was not short of drama, that event, sure, and continues to be. All right, Tim, thank you so much. Appreciate it, man.
Yes,
Tim
Thanks,
Lawson, Gil. At The Better Life. That's BETTOR, The Better Life on Twitter. We'll come back. Dan Weston in studio. I guess they're about to resume the Murray Tsitsipas match that was suspended after set three yesterday, with Murray up 2-1. We're on Murray. Hopefully he can get it done. Weston on Wimbledon and other things. Next in studio, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Getting ready to resume things now between Stefanos Tsitsipas and Andy Murray. As Tsitsipas serves to begin set number four, Murray up 2-1. We're on Murray. What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? And speaking of Wimbledon, Skill Alexander, by the way, speaking of Wimbledon, Dan Weston joins us in studio here on, we'll call it a vacation, from Mariel, England. How you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good, Gil. Great to be here again.
Yes, absolutely. A little breakfast after this, maybe?
Certainly.
We'll
absolutely
do that. Absolutely. You didn't have much today, did you?
No, the card didn't really inspire me at all today. There was a couple of like very slight leans, but I'm quite glad I didn't really get involved with anything like that. Vasily lost, and Alexandrova made a right mess out of a game against Madison Brengel as well. I mean, I thought Alexandrova's serve was going to be far too good. I mean, she's holding like 30% more than Brengel on grass in the last few years, and I think they broke each other 7 times each, which is pretty crazy.
That never happens in women's tennis, huh? I mean, it is one of those. But when you are involved in a match like that, betting wise, it is one of the more frustrating things in sports betting. You're just like, real can't hold any of these.
Yeah.
So Alexandrova, by the way, ends up winning it in 3 sets, but in tiebreakers. What have you, from a macro, so you didn't like anything today, from a macro perspective, by the way, have you looked at anything from tomorrow yet or not yet?
Tomorrow, I mean, the schedule's still like up in the air.
We got to finish these.
Yeah, it's so difficult to get a lot done in advance because of all the delays with the rain and stuff.
This has been super frustrating in that way.
Yeah, English weather.
English weather, imagine. Have you found that it is, I mean, I guess looking for a macro statement on this tournament itself then, do you believe that that causes funkier results generally, or can you not make that statement?
I mean, there's different contexts. So just to give the American listeners a bit of context, the last month in England was extremely hot and dry for the month of June compared to the average month. So I thought the courts were going to play pretty quick. The surface was going to be very hard, and the big servers were going to get quite a nice advantage. Well, that hasn't really happened. We got Jed, by Cressy in particular, got Jed, and then Ben Shelton. The same thing happened as well.
We got Laszlo DeGeri.
So I think the big servers probably haven't had it all their own way that I thought that they might, and have been broken a little bit more than I thought would have been anticipated. So I think there are, and I think there's other factors as well. So I'm always a bit cautious about players coming off the back of five sets, but when it's split over 2 days, it's got a different dynamic.
Sure.
And then you've got Tsitsipas, who obviously almost lost a team in the first round. Now he's going to win this game against Andy Murray. He's going to have to go five sets again, but it's kind of four days played.
That's
10
right.
sets across 4 days. So usually a guy who's played 2 5 setters in a row, you think it's probably going to be fade material, but it's kind of been spread out a little bit. I do think that he's going to be pretty fatigued. But could he be Jed as well in the next round?
Could be, if he gets past Andy Murray, which is a big if. We'll see. Andy Murray was the favorite here, and so far so good as the fourth set is underway. Tsitsipas up 1-0 on serve, 1-love on serve. The other part about this with the weather delays is you end up getting, because for a couple days there, we were getting two matches at a time. The only two courts were center court and court one that were covered, and of course the tournament organizers are going to do their best to get the bigger names out there. Mm. And so you have your favorites to begin with, but then as the tournament moves forward into the third round specifically, you're going to be in a situation where the better players are more well-rested in certain cases as well. So it does tip the scales that way too.
Yeah, it's not an even fight at all in terms of draw. I mean, there was Djokovic was in the third round and some players hadn't even started their first round match. I mean, that's just, second seed already. He's got a massive advantage with the draw being as, one of the top two seeds. Can't face Alcaraz till the final. And now it's become even more lopsided by the fact that obviously he's on center court. He gets the roof and gets the game's match, his match is done early, and everyone else is sort of forced to feed off scraps, if you like, and a couple of sets here and a couple of sets there and different days, and it's not great for the sort of lower ranked players to build momentum and maybe cause a shock. Although there are spots where the draw has opened up a little bit in some situations. So I mean, if Liam Brody was to beat Shapovalov today, he'll either play Guido Peller or Safiulin from Russia in round three. So Brody or Shapovalov, whoever wins that, particularly Brody, who's a British player, obviously coming off the back of a massive, massive underdog win over Casper Ruud yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he got a great chance of making round four. He'd already been talking about how much money he's made in the tournament so far. Apparently he had a thing with his mum when he said he had to earn a certain amount of money. I think he's won about £120,000-£130,000 so far just by getting to this stage. So if he wins against Shapovalov, then he's got a match he'd probably be favourite against in round four as well. So Brody could easily get towards the latter stages into the second week.
Yeah, I don't know if you've looked at updated quarter markets. Is there something out there that you would bet right now?
No, not really. The quarter markets are not even on Betfair this year, which is very strange. They usually are. I don't know why they're not. And so you have to use like commercial books and stuff if you want. And they have quite a big overround on those markets generally as well. So
is it still your sense it's Djokovic is to lose on the men's side? And what about the ladies? I mean, obviously Sabalenka, by the way, wobbled a little bit today before she righted the ship.
Yeah,
Got it done against Varvara Gracheva. Bariga has looked great. Rybakina has looked great. Still the two players to beat, you think?
I think Iga now is overwhelmingly the player to beat. She started off at about 4.5 on Betfair. Now she's into 2.7, which is a significant drop in price. Obviously, there's been players who've around that sort of 20-1, 30-1 mark who've dropped out, and that percentage has to be redistributed across the market. But she's taken the lion's share of the market, whereas Sabalenka, Rybakina's prices are pretty similar to actually the start of the tournament so far. So the market's really strong on Swiatek. And I think that the dominance of her performances so far has kind of put aside those doubts mm-hmm. about her on grass so far. And I think actually, as crazy as it sounds, she might even be value at these prices as favourite.
Might even still be value.
Yeah. I mean, her in the third round of Wimbledon is still a much bigger price than her at the French Open before the tournament started.
Yeah. Have we ever mentioned Swiatek on this show before, Kelly? I'm not sure.
Once or twice, maybe, yeah. But not much.
I mean, I go around here saying, I mean, I've made this proclamation since the 2020 French Open, which is I thought she'd win double-digit majors, and I thought she'll end up being the greatest player of all time. If she does win this, it's her fifth major. It will be her first grass court win ever, a grass court tournament. It'll be her first grass court tournament at the greatest grass court tournament there is, of course. She's going to win double-digit majors, one would think, at that point. She'd already be halfway there, and she's got French Opens to play for the rest of her life. She's 20, just turned 22. So that one seems, barring an injury, to be easy-peasy at this point. Whether she ends up being the greatest of all time, we shall see, but she would certainly be on a Serena pace at that point. And we've always said that even though she hasn't won a grass court tournament, there's no reason why she couldn't have ever been good on grass, right? Mm-hmm. She has the game. She's already won tons of hard court titles as well. She just, the way that it comes on the calendar from clay to grass, so much pressure on her to win clay that the turnaround, she just kind of wants to disappear and show up. Basically, she played a few matches right before Wimbledon this time. So it's just how the calendar juxtaposes.
And also playing, you know, consistently getting to the final of the French Open. You're playing seven matches in 2 weeks. You want a break after that.
Absolutely.
And we've seen Mukova was the same after the French Open getting to the final. She hasn't played a grass warm-up event either.
Right.
So actually, you can understand why, you know, you might want to go on vacation for a week or two after that. But then Djokovic, that's a successful formula for Djokovic. Over the last few years, he doesn't play these warm-up events very often either. He plays maybe one or two exhibition matches on grass in England at a private club, and that will be it for him, and it hasn't really caused him any problems in recent years.
Can you quantify, just for the person who's not the biggest tennis player in the world, just how unbelievably great his numbers are across surfaces compared to everyone else?
Well, I think he has to be the GOAT, basically.
I do too.
Obviously, Nadal is the clay goat. No, there's no doubt about it. And a fully fit Nadal and a fully fit Djokovic, both at peak level, Nadal would win on clay 9 times out of 10, probably. Maybe 8 times out of 10, something like that. Federer, he's been great on grass. He's been solid on hard court, but in terms of the illustrious company, pretty mediocre on clay. But Djokovic just gets the job done on all surfaces.
No matter what.
Yeah. And I think that he's got a winning record, if I'm right, over the other two as well. And I think that that's a critical factor of a debate as well. So,
yeah. And has years to go.
Well, you could easily see him picking up another 5, 6, 7 Grand Slam titles. And you talk about Swiatek as well. I mean, her career goes until the early 30s. She could win 20 slams easily.
You're speaking my language, Dano. We'll come back one more segment with Dan Weston. I'll try to dive into, and maybe Dan has some stuff on this, some of the things we deal with in America in sports betting. What are some of the things he deals with on the other side of the pond, as they say? Dan Weston in studio, Numbers Game, VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Skill Alexander, Dan Weston in studio, Kelly Bidlin in the house as well. Dan Weston from Betfair at Tennis Ratings is where you can find him on Twitter. Also does stuff for Pinnacle, global iconic sportsbook that they are. We were just talking about something off air. I don't know where you were going with it, but I'm curious what you were about to say about tennis betting this year. I think you were about to say
The amount of random scenarios that have developed over this year in terms of, we were just talking about some tough beats and stuff like that. And the amount of times that, you know, you've had an even money pick and your players had more break point chances or won 51, 52% of points in the match and ended up losing. I mean, it's been a pretty brutal.
Pretty brutal year in that respect. Yeah. I totally agree with that. Just living through it, you kind of know that if you bet tennis enough. On serve here in the fourth set between Andy Murray and Stefanos Tsitsipas here early on. Okay, so I teased this before the break, and I'm curious about this because, listen, versus England, we're really young, not only in reality in terms of the time our country has been in existence, but also sports betting. 6 years since PASPA was ruled unconstitutional in this country and that we've had legalized sports betting. And some of the things, you know, in this country, some people anticipated, they predicted correctly how it would go. Some people didn't see certain developments coming. You know, one of the things is that a lot of legalized sports books will tend to, and I'll be kind about this, they're not really that interested in sharp action. They'll limit those players. By the way, they'll also limit players who they probably could have made a lot of money off long term, but they do it haphazardly. They're not as good profilers as they are offshore. And I'm just curious, your experience in England, give us a sense of what that's like. What's similar? What's different?
It's so different. The landscape is completely different. So obviously here in Vegas, you've got an array of super casinos, huge properties, big sports books. If you want to get money on, you probably could, but you have to spread it around maybe. But that's still much more effective than being able to do that in England. In England, you've got what I call like high street bookmakers. So they're on like every street corner, Ladbrokes, Coral, William Hill, Betfred. Obviously, William Hill, Betfred are now coming into the American market, particularly William Hill. And if you want to get more than £100 on a tennis match, for example, or horse, or whatever it might be, you're gonna struggle unless you're a regular.
More than £100.
Yeah, they have to phone through over. I think it's over £100. Yeah, they have phone head office to take the bet. So you've got to spread the money around if you want to get on a half decent sum.
Well, let's talk about what we call soccer, which is obviously football. You know, globally is your most popular sport. Mm. If you wanted to put £1,000 on a soccer match, on a Premier League soccer match, is that an easy experience?
No. You could on Betfair exchange. That would be very straightforward, and you're probably going to get the best prize, but you're paying commission if it wins. If you want to bet on it in a shop, a high street shop like a William Hill, I think it would be pretty tough. When I used to bet soccer a bit, and I was putting like, this is 15 years ago maybe, £300 on, and I could just about, that would be about the right amount of money to get on in a shop at that stage without causing too many alarm bells. If you want to get like £1,000 on, you're gonna have to go to 3, 4, 5 shops minimum. And they might even offer you a worse price for a big amount of money.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. So there's a listed odds, right?
Yeah.
To anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you come in with an amount of money above what they deem comfortable, let's say, they'll switch it on you before you can even place the wager?
Yeah, especially if it's like the best price in the market.
Are there no regulations there to prevent that?
It's very weak.
That's wild.
Bro.
And wild. If you use a self-service terminal, you're probably not going to get as good odds as well as if you went over the counter. So that anonymity aspect of it is difficult as well.
Wow. This is because we complain about a lot of stuff, but this sounds better than what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah.
What's another thing that we would be amazed by or surprised by?
Well, these shops in England, I mean, this studio would be bigger than the average shop.
The street corner shops. By the way, I've come into, I want to say it was a Ladbrokes, but don't hold me to that. And I remember betting summer baseball game in the summer because I wanted to. I was at Dr. Bob's wedding. We were in England. I said, let me bet a baseball game. They had no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I talked about listed pitchers and all that. And they made it happen, by the way. It wasn't for a lot of money.
Did they have to phone through?
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Normal, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you go on to the online market, which obviously is a lot more matured than the American online market because that's pretty deregulated in England, really. I would say that in terms of, companies are now starting to get fined for taking huge bets off people who can't afford it.
Ah.
So there's like affordability checks and stuff like that, which can be a good thing.
That's a nice thing.
Good thing and a bad thing, depending on your status of being a sharp or a square, basically.
Right, right. That's true.
Yeah. So there is that, but...
getting back to the 1,000-pound soccer example, could I do that online with no problem or same thing?
It depends. If it's not the best price in the market, probably. If your account's not a winning account, probably. If either of those factors apply, then probably not. And the companies will restrict you for very, very little as well. You don't even have to win.
Yeah.
Like you can just you set up an account, your first five bets all beat the closing line.
Let's just say I had a good streak. Done.
You're done.
5-0, done.
Yeah. And you might not even win any of those five. Just beat the closing line.
Oh, just CLV.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, can I just say this? At least they would do it on CLV versus just some rando going 5-0 on some horrible numbers. Neither is good, right?
Yeah.
But at least there's some logic
to
that.
Well, either scenario could apply.
Yeah.
Because I'd be that guy. If anything, I'd be that guy. It wouldn't be the 5-0 guy. I'd be the CLV guy.
Yeah, you're 1,000 down.
5, you're banned.
Thousands down and get restricted, yeah.
By the way, that's another thing about this Wimbledon. Like, CLV has mattered not at all. Like, with 30 cents, it's better than the close, and it doesn't matter in the end. I was going to ask something else, though, and now it slipped my mind. But the fascinating part about that is, so we have not only a network here talking about sports betting, we have podcasts about sports betting, and it's very common in the gambling Twitter space of podcasts, and people kind of generally know what I'm talking about with that loose umbrella, where we complain about such things, right? So we're saying, oh, my God, you can't bet this much, you can't bet this much. Is it so... You know, is the culture there of betting so ingrained for so many years that voice is not even there, that it's snuffed out, that it's just, oh, this is just how it is, and we live with it?
Yeah, so I think the average person who wants to, you know, bet £20 on the Grand National, which is the biggest horse race in England, once a year and that's it, they won't even see any of these problems that exist.
Right.
You know, they just go into the high street shop and put their £20 on, and if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. And then the only other time they'll come back in a shop for the rest of the year is if they win and they want to go and pick up that the winnings from that bet.
Mm-hmm.
So the average person doesn't really see it. Sometimes because the online stuff is so... easy to be restricted, you do get some squares who are caught in the sort of firing line when it shouldn't be and get restricted as well. So that can happen too. So online is so difficult to be able to get consistent amounts of money on unless you use the exchange.
Has it caused you, and you don't have to give specifics here, Dan, but has it caused you and others, right, to have to be super adaptable and super creative and find other sort of revenue streams and that sort of thing because of that
limiting 100% culture. You have to.
Yeah.
And especially if you want to get like a mortgage or something in England, you definitely have to do that as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because you know, probably 20 years ago, you used to be able to self-certify an income to be able to get a mortgage. Those rules went out of the window. You can't do that anymore. So I missed the boat on that very slightly. So, yeah, you have to have...
You had a personal experience with that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I had a flat that I wanted to buy an apartment and was about £220,000. They wouldn't give me the mortgage right at the last minute. And now it's worth like $1 million. It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
So that was probably 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it does happen.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if any of that makes us feel better about what we complain about, but it does give us a little perspective.
That I'd rather be an American than an English person to bet.
You would absolutely rather.
Yeah.
Well said. All right. Well, a little perspective on the matter. It ain't just us. And maybe we have it better than others when all is said and done. Dan Weston, everybody, from at Tennis Ratings on Twitter, Betfair, and, of course, Pinnacle Sports as well. Always great to see you, Dan. Thanks for stopping in, as always. And we'll get something to eat here.
Absolute pleasure, Gil.
Dano. at Tennis Ratings on Twitter. We've done all we can do for Kelly Bidlin. I'll be back on Monday. I will be here Monday. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.